New York Times bestselling writer and the deputy curator at Harvard University's Nieman Foundation for Journalism, James Geary, has just written Wit's End, What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. It is a whimsical book that explores every facet of wittiness, from its role in innovation to why puns demonstrate the essence of creativity. Again, the name of the book is Wit's End, and it's a great pleasure to welcome James Geary to the roundtable this morning. James, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So let us begin with what wit is, and when you write a book about it, I assume you have to come up with a fairly concrete definition.
Yes, well, I tried to. I think wit is a challenging thing to define, because I think it's, and that's what I try and explore in the book, it kind of is involved in all kinds of different aspects of human endeavor. It's a kind of, the way that I define it is a quick, instinctive intelligence that helps us think, say, or do the right thing at the right place at the right time. And I think mostly we tend to think of wit as being funny, as making jokes. But the argument that I make in the book is that wit is really more about making connections than just making jokes. And those connections can be funny, like in a punchline or a pun, but they don't have to be funny. And I think wit is equally present and active in things like scientific discovery or innovation, in all kinds of creative endeavors that rely essentially on making surprising and novel connections.
There is something quick about it, though, right? When we use that term, a quick wit, there is something that is sharp and immediate about it.
Absolutely. I think that's part of the essence of wit. There's something improvised about wit. You know, a witty person is able to respond in the moment, given whatever the circumstances are, in a witty way. And it's not really wit if you take a few minutes or a few days to think about it. There's a great phrase. The French philosopher Denis Diderot came up with the phrase l'esprit d'escalier, the wit of the staircase. And he came up with that after he was insulted at a dinner party one night, and he couldn't think of a good comeback until after the dinner party was finished and he was walking down the stairs. And then, and I'm sure we've all had this experience, he thought of the perfect thing, the perfect reply, the perfect riposte, but it was too late to actually deliver it. So one of the things I hope to accomplish in the book is to give people an antidote to l'esprit d'escalier.
When you think about, we always hear this about comedy, that it's almost impossible to describe, and when you write about it, it can be deadly. Did you find the same with wit?
Yes. Unfortunately, I did. I initially tried to write a more conventional book about wit, just by kind of writing conventional chapters and describing things, but just as you suggested, I found that I was really destroying all the kind of pleasure and joy of wit by trying to explain it. And so I eventually came up with the idea of writing each chapter in the book in a different style that would exemplify a different kind of wit. So there's a chapter on how wit might work in the brain, for example, and that's written in the style of a scientific paper. There's a chapter on verbal wit, you know, banter and repartee, and that's written in the form of a play, a dramatic dialogue between two characters, one of whom, by the way, is Denis Diderot. There's a chapter on the spiritual wit, the wit of spirituality, and that's written in the style of a sermon. And there's also chapters written in rap, heroic couplets of Alexander Pope in the style of folk tales. There's a chapter on jokes that's told in the style of a guy telling jokes in a barroom monologue.
Right.
And all the chapters in the physical book are designed differently to kind of also represent that style. So the scientific paper, for example, looks like a scientific paper, and it has diagrams and tables and things like that in it.
And it's very cool to look at and explore as well as read. I did wonder, and I made a note as I was reading the book, of did the styles naturally come to you?
You mean during the writing process?
In the writing process of saying, okay, I want to look at this and think, oh, a scientific paper would be the best thing for this.
Yeah. I had the idea because I was initially trying to write about verbal wit, about banter, and you know, I was not succeeding. And then I had the idea, well, if I try and show what witty banter is by writing it at a dialogue rather than tell what witty banter is, then that might work. And actually, it did work. And I realized that's the key to successfully writing this book. And then I kind of, in my mind, I reviewed the material that I had gathered in my research. And as you said, I kind of divided it up and I realized, well, the stuff about neuroscience I can do as a scientific paper, the other things about ingenious use of language, for example, I can do in the context of a rap song, my thoughts about wit and spirituality should be in a sermon. And so those kind of styles and those kind of categories just kind of organically occurred to me as I was reviewing all the research that I had done. And then to actually write in those styles, I just kind of immersed myself in that kind of material. And I read a lot of sermons, and I listened to a lot of sermons, for example. I read lots of scientific papers, and I listened to Hamilton a lot to help me with the rap lyrics. And also my daughter was crucial in that regard. She's 16, and she's very into rap, so I hear a lot of great rap through her. And so, you know, by immersing myself in those various styles, I just tried to kind of absorb those styles and then produce something in my own voice.
There is a delicacy to wit, isn't there? That comes through in the book.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. There's something very delicate. There's something very precise. There's something very pointed about wit. If we think of someone who's like rhetorically witty, it's like a surgical strike. You know, it's not a broad, blunt instrument, wit. It's something that is carefully honed and carefully directed, and there's some kind of brevity and precision in it. Like Shakespeare said, brevity is the soul of wit. So I think those are key qualities of wit. It's got to be relatively brief, short, pointed. It has to be well delivered, it contains something fresh or new or novel, whether that's an insight or a realization or some kind of linguistic trick. But there's something performative about wit that makes it really special.
So let's go to one of the questions that's in the subtitle of Why We Need It. In your opinion, after studying it and writing it and looking at it in such detail, why do you think we need wit?
Well, I think wit is something that everybody has. And again, I think sometimes we tend to think of wit as something that, you know, only people like Dorothy Parker have, or Oscar Wilde, or these great giants of literature, Mark Twain. But I think the ability, you know, if wit is the ability to make these novel, surprising connections among really different kinds of things, then we all have that ability, and we all do that every day. And if you think about the way we use the word wit in ordinary language, live by your wits, you mentioned earlier, to be quick-witted, to reach your wit's end, to be dim-witted, a nitwit, to outwit someone, all those expressions and phrases have to do with a kind of intelligence, really, a kind of improvisational intelligence, and rather than just an ability to make jokes. And so I think why we need wit is because we all need that. We're all living by our wits all the time in our daily lives, you know, just making ends meet or in the context of some kind of personal or psychological or emotional crisis. We need to be able to use our wits to get out of tricky situations and to solve difficult problems in daily life. So I think that's one reason we need wit. But I also think more broadly, from a kind of broader social perspective, if you think about the biggest challenges that we face today, they're really complex issues. Like if you take perhaps the biggest challenge we face, the environment and climate change, that has to do with the climate, yes, but it also has to do with economics. It has to do with immigration. It has to do with politics. It has to do with social class. It has to do with technology and innovation. And I think what wit is, at essence, is making connections between different things. So a problem like climate change, to solve it, we really, really, really desperately need to make those connections among those different fields of knowledge and different domains of information. And so I think to address the biggest social, political challenges that we face today, we really need to keep our wits about us.
You partially answered a question that I had in when you were talking about Oscar Wilde and Dorothy Parker and Mark Twain of do they make them like they used to? But when you think of those greats, do we have what we consider as our terminology change or as our respect for wit changed, that we do we have those literary figures that we can revere now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think the title of my book is Wit's End, which is in itself a pun. I don't argue in the book that we're coming to the end of wit, and the pun that I'm making is more wit's purpose. To what end do we have wit? You know, to what end can we use wit? So I think we're not coming to the end of wit, and I think that there are still lots of witty people around. I think Lily Tomlin, for one, is a really witty person. One of my favorite lines from her is, she said, "All my life, I always wanted to be somebody, but I realize now I should have been more specific." I just think that's a really funny,
yes,
wise comment. So I think there's people like her and, you know, late night comedy and the boom in stand-up comedy that we're experiencing on cable television with so many great new comics coming along. So I think there's plenty of wit out there and plenty of people who are witty. And I also think, you know, for all the bad press that social media gets, so Twitter, for example, I think you can be, you know, Twitter has the word wit in it, and it also has the word twit in it. And, you know, both of those qualities are present. But I think some of the, you know, the memes that you see on social media in response to news events, I think those are incredibly witty. And I think social media gives us a tool to be witty in a visual way that we really didn't have before. And that has dangers, too, and deep fakes and all that kind of stuff. But I think one area where wit is really percolating along quite nicely is in meme culture and those kind of visual gags that are based on news events. I think they're really witty.
James Geary is the author of Wit's End, What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. The book is published by Norton. James, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Wit's End, published by Norton. James Geary is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.